Welcome to another song of the week. This is going to be our 16th song since we started the program. Who would believe that? Who would believe that? This is wonderful. Terry, hello. Good to see all of you that are coming. Today, we decided to share something a little bit more personal also, in a sense. We will listen to a very...
After last week that we had a really hard time with the song.
Some of us.
We decided to do something different and something that I think most of you will like. So we decided to do something to combine a beautiful song and a personally story.
So just we will talk. We will listen to a song, a very famous song in Israel, very important song, almost like the anthem of the kibbutzim in Israel. And we will talk a little bit about the story behind the song, the band that sings the song, and also we will share with you where we come from, what kibbutz, Masuot Yitzchak. We'll show you some picture. Where is it on the map? What exactly is a kibbutz? How do we live there? And all those kind of stuff. This is going to be today. It's going to be very nice.
Maybe also Benny and Ruchama will live.
Exactly. We will talk about Hiachzut HaNachal and about Gar'in HaNachal, so that we have some representative here in the class that can share with us their experience. So with no further introduction, you can all just please make sure you're muted, that your speakers are on, and enjoy the song. Let's make sure everyone are muted.
Yeah.
Welcome back. I don't think we need to talk. Take it from here.
Ein Tzurim.
This is from Ein Tzurim. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Wait, who's in the... That's you in the picture. Oh my goodness. Here you are, Benny also. Here is... Muhammad is Takli. Look, here is Benny also. His picture from the phone. Oh my goodness, this is wonderful. This is the Gilboa. The Gilboa.
Muhammad Ein Tzurim in Gush Etzion or south in Israel? After the war or before the war?
This is your room in the yeshiva.
This is where I learned. That's right. That's right. Okay, this is amazing. This is amazing. Just to say, so just for to ask both of you who were part of this program. Muhammad, you served in the army. You were there in Ein Tzurim. In what years? Can you share with us? We're talking about 50s.
About 100 years ago.
Somewhere around, I would assume somewhere around what? 50s, 60s, something like that. I would assume. And Benny?
1960,
well, in Malek Gilboa. Yes, in Malek
Gilboa. November 29, 1962.
Oh my goodness. This is wonderful. This is wonderful. Okay, let's just introduce the topic and the song and everything. So first of all, those of you who came in the middle, we will re-listen to the song at the end of the session. Don't worry. We're talking today about kibbutzim, and we're talking also about what is called Gar'in Nachal. Who of you heard about Gar'in Nachal? Those of you who are not volunteering in that kin. There is no transit of Gar'in Nachal. Gar'in Nachal is something that you just call it. Let's share the... We'll share the screen and you will see the pictures and the name of the song. So first of all, just to talk a little bit about the song, just for the song itself. So it's called Hora to the Settlement, or Hora He'achzut. That's the name of the song, written by Yechiel Mohar in 1953, composed by Dov Zeltzer in 1953, and the performance we just heard is from the band Kaveret, or they're well known in America as Pugi. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Kaveret or heard of them. Very, very famous Israeli band in the 70s and after. And this performance is from 1974, this recording. They were not the first one to record the song, but they were the first one to make it popular. Before them, Lehakat HaNachal, the Nachal band, which we brought already in different occasions in this program, they recorded the song. This is Kaveret in the 70s. You can see that they got some influence from the Beatles, right? You can see how they look like. You can see there's some things that are... you would think maybe John Lennon is standing here, but it's not John Lennon. You can see the people standing over here around... it's consisted out of seven guys. And this is them today. All of the people in the band. Some of you might be you might recognize. I saw that someone wrote in the chat that she really loved Danny Sanderson. So Danny Sanderson is the guy who here in the middle. Yoni Rechter was actually we brought him as part of. I don't remember now. That was 2 weeks. Yeah, Kevas Shishata, the 16th Lamb. If you remember, we talked about it 2 weeks ago. So he was a composer there, and he was part of this band. Very, very famous Israeli band. Maybe the most famous band of all time. People still listen to their songs. Kids, adults, families, everyone. They were only, I think, they were active for 3 years. No more than 3 years. And they're still very, very, very famous in Israel since the 70s. Just to let you know, they were reunited for a show in 2013. And they had 3 or 4 nights sold out in Israel with tens of thousands of people. All ages coming to their songs, to listen to their songs, which is really, 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 really nice. So this is about Kaveret. We're not going to talk.
Also, there is
a mitzvah
voting.
There's a
band. Who is the most Israeli band in Israel? And most of the voting
went to Kaveret. Yeah, really, to Pugi. Yeah. I don't know if you know the name Pugi. That's how it's called in the States. this is the album, as you saw, Kaveret Pugi. It's called Pugi Bepita. They're in the pita. You can see here the vegetables that we're talking about.
Singing. Is Pugi.
No one knows them as Pugi in Israel. No one.
If
but
you say Pugi in Israel,
no one will know them. But that's how they label themselves outside of Israel, which is interesting. You want to take it from him? You want to explain it a little bit? We said something here.
We want to talk about Nahal. Noar Chalutzi Lochem. There is a translate here. Down.
Where Ruchama and Benny served.
Yeah, and we want to talk about them because this song is talking about Chaklaut, help me.
Agriculture.
Agriculture and the army. It's combined both of them in the same song because they want to tell about the story of the Nahal, how they combine to work and to be
active in the fields and
settle
Israel.
Israel
and they were also soldiers.
Yeah.
In that sense. Like it says, right? It says here, we took the, you see Benny's picture for the soldier. Benny, you didn't change. I have to tell you, you didn't change. Really didn't change. Also Ruchama, both of you didn't change. So it says in the song, it was decided to take the sheaf and graft it with swords. So this is the symbol of the Nahal. You see there's swords and there is a sheaf over here and they turned the agriculture and the military together. That was the part, that was the role of Hanachal. They were sent groups of teenagers, the later young adults that served in this program. They were sent all around Israel to build different places. I think I have here a map. This is the map. You can see all the different places that were actually turned out to be from. They founded it. There are different places, not all of them, but different places here that the Garin Hanachal established in Israel. Some of them turned to be Moshavim and Kibbutzim later on. There's more that are not here on the map because there's not room for all of them to be on the map. There's really hundreds of them around Israel. But this is something that really helped Israel flourish in the 50s, in the 60s, in the 70s. The last one was closed in 2002. That was the last Garin HaNachal up north in a place called Maskiot. Over here, this is Maskiot. Right here, this is the last one. You can see here on the border with Jordan. And that's a very interesting part of the history of Israel. And they were combining agriculture and military and service in the army together. This was their role in Israel. And many, many people that lived in Israel in the 50s, 60s, 70s, this was their service in the army. So for example, Ruchama over here shared that she lived in Ein Tzurim, which was this Gar'in, there was a Gar'in Nahal, very close to where we're going to talk about Masuot Yitzchak, which is where we lived, south in southern Israel. Between
Ashdod, yeah.
After the war, and Benny served in Ma'ale Gilboa, up north, not far from Beit She'an in Afula, up north on the Gilboa Mountain. This is where I learned my yeshiva was up north. My yeshiva after high school was there. So it's really, really amazing to have both of you here in this program. Priel, you want to talk a little bit about Masuot Yitzchak?
Yeah, okay. Masuot Yitzchak, a beautiful kibbutz that I was born there and I grew up there. It's next to Ashdod and Ashkelon, if you can see. Next
the circle, the red circle, is where Masuot Yitzchak is on the map.
Yeah, you can see it's close to Gaza. So when we have some situation in Israel, so we got a lot of boom.
A lot of boom. It's not, yeah, it's 20 minutes drive from the border with Gaza.
And it's kibbutz, it's a religious kibbutz, but when we say kibbutz and people that really know Masuot Yitzchak, they will say, no, it's not a kibbutz, it's a meshek. What it means? It's between Moshav, that it's...
Moshav and Moshav.
Moshav.
Moshav and Moshav, yeah.
Between Moshav and kibbutz, it's something that combines both of the names, of the ideal how to live the life. And
maybe you should explain what the difference between kibbutz and moshav.
Yeah.
So you want to do that? All right. So there's the kibbutzim and there's moshavim in Israel. The difference between a moshav and a kibbutz is that a moshav is just like a regular small kind of village or settlement or that is focused on agriculture. But the unit, the financial unit, is the family itself. That means that the family builds their own home, they own their house, they're taking care of their own budget, but everyone share the burden regarding the agriculture, regarding working for everyone, or farmers, or used to be farmers, used to work, everyone has got his own piece of land, which he worked, maybe for himself, maybe for the entire group. This is a moshav. A kibbutz, on the other hand, is almost like moshav, but the financial unit is not one's family, rather it's the entire members of the kibbutz. That means all the members, it's almost communism, all the members of this kibbutz share the same bank account, for example, or budget, or salary, or expenses, or everything you can think about. Back then, today it doesn't exist anymore. They used also to, not in Masuot Yitzchak, but in other kibbutzim, they used to have what is called Beit Yiladim, which is a children's house, where children used to sleep and live, not with their parents, but in a, like this dormitory in the kibbutz itself. And also some of the kibbutzim still today have lunchroom, dining room, cheder ochel, where they're all coming and eating together, because back then they didn't have kitchens in their house, or just a basic kitchen, because you didn't need to buy food to your house, because you eat with everyone, you work with everyone, you share with everyone your money, so there's no need to have your own laundry or your own cooking your own food. So some of the kibbutzim are still like that today, but no kibbutz has Beit Yeladim anymore.
So I want to tell you that Masoret Yitzchak started the first years next to Jerusalem in Gush Etzion.
There's a picture. Can go down a little bit?
Go down, please.
Wait, here, this is it. This is Masoret Yitzchak in Gush Etzion.
Pictures took from Gush Etzion, but in an independent war.
In the independence war, yeah.
They fold, and then they moved to south of Israel, next to Ashkelon.
Here,
and when they moved, they decided to close the Beit Yeladim, the kids.
Yeah, the kids home. I don't know, Beit Yeladim.
And the lunchroom, because they decided to take the value of a family and to live lives as families. Each family eat home with the kids every day. So they decided to change a little bit the ideals of kibbutz, and they combined between moshav and kibbutz and did something that have from here and from here, and
it's called a communal, a communal farm in that sense. Or Meshek Shitufi would be a communal farm. So in other words, in our kibbutz where we lived, where Priel grew up and I moved after the after our wedding, everyone share their bank accounts. That means they're all, if you have sell your income, all the members of the kibbutz, they share their incomes. That means that if you work in something, that not, that doesn't necessarily mean you're a farmer, but if you work as a doctor, as an attorney, something, and you get your salary, you give your salary direct to the kibbutz itself, and you get at the end of the month a portion of what you need from everyone's income together. Everyone gets according to the number of kids that they have in their home, or according to their age, according to their needs, and so on and on. So you don't get your own income. It doesn't come to your, it doesn't get into your bank account. So this is the kibbutz that we live in. I want to show you a little bit. By the way, the kibbutz is called Masuot Yitzchak. Masuot Yitzchak is, in Hebrew, the torches of Yitzchak. The torches of Yitzchak. Masuot. Masuot is a torch. The torches of Yitzchak. Who is Yitzchak? So you all know Yitzchak Herzog, the guy over here, who is the 11th president of Israel, the current president of Israel. His father, Chaim Herzog, was the 6th president of Israel. But Chaim Herzog's father, in other words, Yitzchak Herzog's grandfather, is Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, who was the first chief rabbi of the state of Israel, and the Meshek Shitufi, the communal farm, Masuot Yitzchak, is named after Rav Yitzchak Herzog, in order to honor him. So our kibbutz is named after Rabbi Herzog, who was the first chief rabbi of the state of Israel. Not the first chief rabbi of Israel, but of the state of Israel, which is different, because the chief rabbinate existed already before the establishment of the state of Israel. This is the entrance of our kibbutz, Masuot Yitzchak. You can see it over here. This is the kibbutz, a regular kind of kibbutz. Those of you who ever visited a kibbutz, you know how it looks like. Very Hamish, maybe very pastoral. Not too fancy, not too sophisticated. Everything is very simple. Debbie asked if we would recommend living in a kibbutz. Wow.
It's a hard question. For the vibe and, you know, for the feeling that you live in a community all together, the kids with the adult people and just be together, yes. But all the, the money together, it's really hard for some people, I think.
Can I answer as someone who didn't grow up in a kibbutz what I think?
Yeah.
I'll say from the outside. I'll say that as follows. That's first of all, the question is a financial question. Before all the ideals and before if you're a socialist or a capitalist or whatever. First of all, that's a question of finance. Because if someone, for example, has a very large income and he's well, very wealthy, could be very wealthy if he doesn't live in a kibbutz, it doesn't work for him to live in a kibbutz and bring his entire income and salary to the kibbutz and get less than what he would be paid outside. But if someone doesn't work in a very wealthy position, or his income is not as big as other people, and maybe that's a large family that is very difficult and miserable situation, to put the bread on the table and everything, it's very it would be very worthwhile living in a kibbutz, because sometimes you're gonna get more than you would have get if you live out of the kibbutz.
I think that this topic was really good in Israel 20 years ago. That there is families that just came from around the world and need help and need communities that will live together. So it was really good for them. But now, when the money and everything works different in Israel, it's really hard to live like this. That you get a lot of money from your work, but you don't really get that.
That's a very interesting question today, how to do that. It's many of the kibbutzim are privatized today, and
yeah,
they don't really share their income anymore, but there's still some of them, still a nice, decent amount of people that are like that.
Yeah.
Ira, I already have a question.
Yeah, I think you just answered it. I was going to ask, are kibbutzim still the same type of socialist collective that they were originally 70 or more years ago? When I was living on a kibbutz for a few months back in the late 1980s, it already seemed to be changing somewhat, that there was more privatization. And so I'm just wondering what
I would just say, the kibbutz you were on, Zdot Yam, the kibbutz you were on, if they were, the reason they were privatizing the kibbutz is because they're sitting in one of the most expensive places in Israel. That means whoever had a house in the kibbutz you were volunteering on is very, very wealthy today. So it was worthwhile for them. But other kibbutzim, like Maale Gilboa, for example, which is privatized today, where Benny Meiser, Cantor Meiser, where he volunteered, where he served, they are privatized, but the kibbutz is it's a very rare place. It took me almost 4 hours from Tel Aviv to get there every time that I needed to get to the kibbutz. So it really depends where you are in that sense. I would also add that in the song, when we saw how they combine, how the song is talking about taking the military, the army aspect and the agricultural aspect and trying to combine between the two, it's something that you see also in the kibbutzim today, which is they're very idealistic in going to the army and in serving in the army, a lot of them in combat and also in working the fields. Not as they used to. For example, in our kibbutz, there's still agriculture. We grow avocados, olives, almonds. What else do we grow?
Every year it's different.
Every year is different.
Yeah.
So there are avocados, there is almonds, there is wheat, there is we have eggs, we have milk, we have chickens, all of those kind of stuff. And also, most of the income to the kibbutz comes from totally a different thing, which is a plantation that makes, a factory that makes wet wipes, for example. It's called Albad. It's the biggest one in the Middle East and in Europe. And it's very interesting because most of the income comes from this factory and not from agriculture anymore. But all the kibbutz...
This is one reason why the kibbutz may be still sharing the money together.
And they're not privatized, yes.
It helped the families... Maybe.
You have a family in that sense.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see how the kibbutzim has changed in the past decades, in the past generations. And we don't know where it's gonna lead us. We don't know if we're gonna go back to the kibbutz. We need to figure that out. What it will be our plans after we leave Toronto.
But it's a beautiful community. All of the people together live the life. I don't know. I feel that in the kibbutz you don't feel that you have a different age. You can be at the same room with adult people if you are in elementary school, high school, after university, I don't know, and just sit together, do the same activity, take the same classes. It was beautiful, beautiful, and the connection between people there, it's really...
It's a great place to, Debbie, ask again, if you recommend living in a kibbutz. We'll say we very much recommend it as an aliyah thing. So if someone is making aliyah...
My family made aliyah.
Priel's family made aliyah from France to the kibbutz. It's a very good place to make aliyah to, because that's a community, that's an embracing community.
And
it's very,
it's called
very
Masuot. How do you say that in English?
Torches.
Torches. To call people from all the world to come.
There's a torch.
Yeah.
It was fire to call people to come. Yes, this is this. Before we re-listen to... one second. Where someone can mute himself. Before we re-listen to the song, Ira, do you have a question?
Yes. Actually, I was just left to try and find my Stud Yum shirt, but I think it's too long. But I did want to ask about changes to kibbutzim. Are there still the children's houses, or are young children now living with their parents?
No, they're living with their parents. That's why we say, yeah, they're living with their parents anymore. Do you remember, I would actually ask this, Benny and Ruhama, when you were there, were the kids, I don't know if there were kids back then in those places, were they living in, I know, Benny, that when you were there were no families, you were only soldiers, right? When you were there.
I don't know about Ruhama, but I want to tell you that we came up to a Bear Mountain and we built the water tower. We built the water tower, and it was not a kibbutz, it was an army post connected with JNF. And for half a year, when we were there, it was just on the border above Jenin. For half a year, we planted every day 150 trees.
Wow.
That is why the Gilboa now is Nofa Gilboa.
Wow.
It's not a kibbutz. Was established many couple of years afterwards, and whenever I go there, there's an archive of our chevre building the kibbutz.
Oh my goodness!
We have a 60th anniversary reunion, and the kibbutz is very prosperous because it has the most sophisticated dairy farm, machlavot.
I'll tell you even more than that. I will tell you, Benny, because I learned in Maale Gilboa. I will tell you that because of the Maale Gilboa is on the top of the mountain, one of the most beautiful places in Israel. The view is just outstanding. And the wind, because of the wind, it's very windy up there. They built those kind of turbines to make electricity. And that's very successful also for the kibbutz. It's a very good income for the kibbutz.
Just that you know, Idan, just that you know, that when I'm younger than you, I used to run from near David up to the Gilboa in Apakal.
Oh, wow. Ooh, wow. Ooh, wow. That's all the way from the valley up north. This is wonderful. This is wonderful to have you, Benny, and have you, Ruhama.
It's a different story. After the Imunim, 3 months of Imunim that I had to go.
Of training, Japan, yes.
Then they sent me to teach in Tveria.
In Tveria? That's very far from Ein Tzurim. Very far from Ein Tzurim.
So that's it, you know.
Wow, 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 wow. This is amazing. First of all, it's an honor to have both of you here in this program, which is wonderful. Those of you who served in Garin HaNachal, those are the founders of what is today's modern Israel. The places you've been there are, they're not the same, thanks to you. And what you did over there, I can tell you because we know both of them. We know Ein Tzurim because we live right next doors. And we know Maale Gilboa because that's where I learned for 2 years, which is an amazing thing. So thank you for that. This is really, really an amazing thing.
Idan, I had a girlfriend from Tirat Tzvi.
You had a girlfriend from another kibbutz from Tirat Tzvi. Oh my goodness. This is amazing. This is amazing. I know some of you have questions. We will stay here after the song again for questions. We will re-listen to the song. Thank you very much, all of you. For coming tonight for Song of the Week. We hope you enjoyed it. We will be here again next week on Monday, 7:30. And we hope to see you all there again. And if you have any notes, comments, you want to schmooze, you want to ask questions, we will be here. Priel and I are going to stay here after the song again. So you can stay with us. Here we go. Hora He'achzut.